You're our father, and that's good enough for us.
The great Groucho Marx on this Father's Day weekend, and what better way to kick it off? Very nice, Jess, very nice. Yes, today is Father's Day.
Is it today?
And I'm giving you a tie. I believe it's all
no,
that time.
When is Father's Day?
Sunday, Ray. Your children will come in and shower you with gifts.
Ties and whatnot. Yeah, what a made-up, horrendous holiday that is.
Oh, so you're...
I hate it.
Your children get to
they
honor you.
They do that
you.
Every day.
All right.
They honor me by being disobedient every single day.
Showing their love.
Exactly. Good morning and, happy Father's Day to all of the fathers out there. And we will we'll be having a nice essay, Father's Day essay later on today. And we'll be marking the occasion. But happy Father's Day. On our panel this morning, we are going to talk about a lot of interesting topics. And we welcome our panel. Of course, you've heard Ray Graff already having comments and thoughts.
And you'll hear
and
more.
Sharing commentary this morning.
Get used to it.
Of course, Associate Editor of the Times Union, Mike Spain, joins us on this Friday. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
Well, it's great to have you here. Thank you.
It's nice to hear regular programming resuming.
Oh, isn't it?
If that's what you could call this, right you are. Well done.
We're very happy to have heard this as well, to be back into the regular saddle of whatever that is. We have a lot of interesting topics to talk about, and let's begin with a local story, certainly a New York State story, and I think it's a fascinating one because states all around the country obviously are dealing with this. And it is a settlement that finally occurred regarding casino gaming in this state, and an agreement that took years and years and years to come to be with Indian tribes within the state.
Yeah, James Odato, our Capitol reporter, really covers these things very closely. And he points out in his story today that this deal with the Seneca Indian Nation in western New York came after lots of hard words between the Cuomo administration and the president of the Seneca tribe, Barry Snyder. Just a couple weeks ago, he was calling Cuomo a bully because the state was threatening to open a commercial casino right in the heart of the Seneca district where they have their own casinos. And now they've come to terms and everybody's arm in arm. They had a press conference in Niagara Falls just outside the Seneca Casino there. And the state has agreed to, basically give an exclusive contract to the Seneca Indian Nation that will last through 2022. And it will, in exchange, they'll contribute more to the state coffers. But the state will also tell the racinos in the district, there's three racinos that have limited gambling, to stop marketing themselves as casinos. So racinos.
But they get to stay open?
Yeah, they get to stay open, but they can't add slot machines and, any table games. And that's what would be allowed if the state passes a constitutional amendment and opens their own casinos.
So how does this affect the other, or does it have any effect on the other conversations that have been taking place within the state to expand gaming?
Well, what it does is it knocks out that part of the state,
how big of a part, Mike?
Well, it goes all the way from the southern tier, Olean, Jamestown, Salamanca, up to Niagara Falls, Buffalo, pretty much, western New York.
Okay.
And then they've already brokered deals, which we've talked about in the past with the Mohawks and the Oneida Indians. The Oneidas run Turning Stone out in central New York, and that area has been kind of now locked in by them. And then the Mohawks have Akwesasne up in the North Country. So that leaves, and Cuomo has...
The Catskills. And,
that's right, the Catskills, the Hudson Valley, and maybe a little bit of the southern tier near Binghamton up through central New York. So they're holding off on any casinos in the New York metro area. They want the immediate impact of casinos and the benefits, if there are any, the revenues that they bring to go to upstate areas that need the money more. And as I said, if it has any benefits, there's a lot of opponents, and you can expect as this gets on the state ballot for state voter approval, you know, constitutional amendment would be required. This will generate enormous debate and ads and TV ads and radio ads and
Can I ask a very naive question, which as a person within the news media, I just don't quite understand, which is when it comes to this issue of gaming, and I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just asking about the time frame. Why does it take so long? I mean, these are arguments and these are questions and concerns that have gone on for decades.
Right. I think I agree. You know, it's come up every few years. Hudson Valley lawmakers have said they need them in the Catskills. It was seen as a way to revitalize the Catskills economy. It took a long time to get racinos, which, basically
right.
Like at the Saratoga Harness facility, to get.
And I'm not suggesting it shouldn't. I'm just interested that the way we move with such rapidity on some things, that this is one issue that takes a very long time.
Well, I mean, there's a constitutional
right.
issue
I mean,
that they don't have in Massachusetts. I don't think that's an issue in Massachusetts, yeah. Is it? Did they have to have an amendment?
I don't know if they needed a constitutional amendment or just the state legislature to approve it. But here, the legislature has to approve it. Twice, and then the voters have to say yay or nay. But I think it's economics. I mean, the economy. I think this is the push that finally got it through. This has been lobbied for by casino companies and by a certain segment of lawmakers and others who see it as a great way to bring more revenue into the state and into communities. And it hasn't really been... gotten traction until the state really had deficits. A couple of years ago, that's when Cuomo began really to push it when he took office, and now it has traction. It looks like it's going to head to a vote.
So the deal yesterday essentially puts all of central New York out of play. In other words, is there a gap between the Senecas and where the Oneida, in other words...
Yes, I think as...
Syracuse in play?
As we've reported it, it'd be south of Syracuse. It would be more like Binghamton up part way to Syracuse. And, there's been some maps that have been published, and I don't have one in front of me, but essentially the Hudson Valley, the Catskills, and that part, Binghamton, kind of going north mm-hmm. through the middle of New York State. So part of central New York would be eligible. But most of these areas have been negotiated away with these long-term deals with these Indian nations, and that sets the stage for the next phase of this, and that is the public debate about whether we should have casino gambling in New York. And you can bet you'll be having lots of people here at WAMC on the air talking about it.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. But it does seem that if you're let's just say turning so for our listeners who are within the Capital District and east of that, that you say, all right, well. You look at the possibility of expansion in Saratoga or Lake George or some of the other places that we've discussed, even down into Sullivan County and then the Hudson Valley. That if you are Turning Stone and the Oneida Nation, because you're sort of the first stop out of the city, you know what I mean? It seems like that would then become something that, yes, there's the overall debate, as we've seen, of course. Yes, there's the overall debate over gaming, but then there's going to be some turf wars here.
So you think they may be lobbying against this?
I would think you would.
Yeah, that'll be interesting when you trace the money. I mean, when you trace the money, who will be behind it? It may be, you know, church groups, you know, people who oppose gambling, arguing that it really hurts the poor. It doesn't generate enough revenue, and they'll look at Atlantic City and use that as an example, et cetera. And then there'll probably be some money going in from existing
Trump and Foxwoods.
Yeah,
and
places
Mohegan.
That have Trump, right? Yeah. And so there'll be a lot of alignment of people with different points of view, but the same self-interest. You know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend kind of thing.
We may not see that lobbying from some of the big interests until the licenses are more focused, because they're all going for it. I mean, I believe Foxwoods and Mohegan they have plans in the works for New York, you know, as they do in Massachusetts.
To expand.
Yeah.
Well, it's all very interesting. We're going to take a break. We come back. We'll talk about other issues as well. We'd love to hear from you. Roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also comment on our webpage or our Facebook page or by tweeting us at WAMC Roundtable, at WAMC Roundtable. We'll be right back after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Nathan LaTower Hospital and Nursing Home, Gloversville, New York, announcing their new Diagnostic Imaging Center, NLH.org, and SPAC, presenting New York City Ballet, featuring the Ballet Gala, the Ruby Hall, July 13th, with SPAC Junior Committee, hosting the lawn party, fireworks, after-party dancing, and more. This year, GE sponsors kids, and Citizens Bank sponsors students. SPAC.org for tickets.
When we'll get together then, you know we'll have a good time then. My son turned 10 just the other day. He said, thanks for the ball, Dad, come on, let's play. Can you teach me to throw? I said, not today. I got a lot to do, he said, that's okay. And he walked away, but his smile never did. It said, I'm gonna be like him, yeah. You know I'm gonna be like him.
I like the music.
Who knew?
This is great. Johnny Cash did that. Yeah. Awesome. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. I'm Joe Donahue. Ray Graff is here, and the associate editor of the Times Union, Mike Spain, our special guest this morning. And again, we welcome your input as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We have just a few minutes before we go over to NPR News, and I wanted to touch on a story that you have. It's an AP story. It's a very interesting story about the New York Air National Guard Airlift Wing promoting sexual abusers instead of punishing them. This according to a retired officer who handled claims of sexual assault in the unit. And I guess if anything, this is one example of what reports have shown overall and in a more general context within the military.
Yes, the letter that the Associated Press reports today is from a Lieutenant Colonel Sharon Dwyer Stepp, who until her retirement, retirement from the military in 2010, was based at the New York Air National Guard Base in Schenectady County in the town of Glenville, the Stratton Air National Guard Base. And she was the unit's sexual assault prevention and response coordinator for 4 years over there. And now, with all the discussion going on in Washington about the how to deal with the rise in sexual assaults of women in the military, she stepped forward and released a letter. She lives in Bennington, Vermont, and presented the letter to U.S. Senator Patrick Leahy of Vermont. And it's getting a lot of attention. Meanwhile, a spokesman for the division, New York State Division of Military Naval Affairs, does say that there's an investigation involving allegations of sexual misconduct involving the 109th, the air base in Schenectady County. But there was no comment, and it sort of is interesting that at the same time she's complaining that in her experience, the people that were accused of sexual assault in the 109th and in the Air National Guard in New York ended up not getting disciplined. They ended up getting promoted, and that seems to be the rub. But it does come when New York's own U.S. Senator, Kirsten Gillibrand, has been at odds with others in her own party and aligned with others in the Republican Party, asking for more accountability and a change in the way that the Pentagon and the military handles allegations of sexual assault, of course.
Colonel Richard Goldenberg, who is a spokesman for the division, Didn't comment on the specifics, but he did make the point that of the accusations from STEP, that she left in 2010 with an honorable discharge, and he makes the point that there have been major changes in the rules and that such reports are investigated promptly, and that the things have changed in the last 3 years, which you hope is true, and you hope is the case, and yet it does seem to counter the federal reports and information that we have seen that has far more recent data.
Yeah, and the issue is whether the chain of command, you know, should make the decision, whether military officers should make the decision of if whether any of these allegations are pursued in the military tribunals, rather than having like prosecutors handle it. And that's what Senator Gillibrand and others are favoring. And yet that while some rule changes did happen and some procedures have been streamlined, the Pentagon is going to still have the chain of command make the final decision.
And I think it's also, again, the timing of these things does interest me, but you have this lieutenant colonel who leaves in 2010, and then it's 3 years, you know.
Mm-hmm. A lot can happen in 3 years, but it's an issue now. And, you know, you would expect that her, you know, she was prompted by what was going on in Washington to come out.
It seems that this is more a cultural issue, because what Stepp says is none of the alleged victims filed formal complaints because all were worried about the effects on their careers.
Right.
So if there are no formal complaints,
that's the issue. Yeah.
Yeah. Until you come forward with a formal complaint, you can't have any option for justice. And yet, if it doesn't work out and they don't believe you essentially, or there's not enough evidence, there's no finding that you were the victim and somebody was guilty, it can hurt your record.
I mean, what is apparent is the culture has got to change, and it maybe is changing. I don't know. But I mean, that would point to an issue where everybody's afraid to say anything.
Yeah, it's not going away.
Yeah. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will talk about many other issues, and we'll talk about Syria, and we'll talk about a local landmark that apparently will be closing. You can join us by emailing us at roundtable@wamc.org. You can also comment on our webpage or Facebook page or by tweeting us at WAMC Roundtable. We'll be back right after this short break. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. I'm Joe Donahue, along with Ray Graff and Mike Spain from the Times Union. And it is our Friday panel, our second panel of the week after the fun drive. And we're just starting to find our rhythm again, which is and now we have a weekend. We get to go back. Yeah, that's good. You can join in on the fun, roundtable@wamc.org. You can also comment on our webpage or Facebook page or tweet us at WAMC Roundtable, at WAMC Roundtable. I guess the big story, of course, it is the major story that is dominating the headlines, and that is the Obama administration, concluding that the troops in Syria have used chemical weapons against rebel forces in that country's civil war, and they decided to begin supplying the rebels for the first time with small arms and ammunition, according to American officials. This story broke late yesterday afternoon, and the officials held out the possibility that the assistance coordinated by the CIA could include anti-tank weapons, but they said for now supplying the anti-aircraft weapons that rebel commanders have said they sorely need is not under consideration. But you do have to wonder how quickly this is going to grow.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of support for this in the Congress. Of course, Senator John McCain, has been pushing this for a long time and saying that we need to step in and stop the deaths of Syrians, and we have to do something to unseat the government there, which is attacking its own people. But the real issue has been a reluctance by the White House and by many in the U.S. to give a lot of arms to these rebels because they don't want to they don't know what's going to happen to them. I mean, which rebels do you support, and how much do you give them, and what are they going to do with them after they, unseat, Assad and his government, and who's next, and we have some level of experience in this part of the world with things going awry after the dictator gets pushed out,
Absolutely. I mean, Egypt has got to be on their minds as well. I mean, it's a similar situation, although it may well be worse where we are right now.
The president, I'm sorry, go ahead, Mike.
No, it's just you were saying the president said last August that we
that's
wouldn't.
That's exactly what I was going to
say. Right, yeah. And now, even a few months ago when it looked like there was evidence, the White House held off and really doesn't want to do this. I mean, you can see that it's very hesitant to get, it's sort of like a tar baby. You touch something and you're stuck in it for a long time.
Do you think that the president, to some extent, regrets the statement about the crossing the line last year?
That's been reported that, maybe he stepped in it when he said that. And
every president who has ever said that, a line in the sand or anything, has regretted it.
Well, you make an ultimatum. whether you go to the boss's office and say, I want to raise
We're
or
not
else,
gonna do
you
this.
Make an ultimatum and you can be in trouble if you don't get the result you expect.
Well, it does have the he has to manage the balance between not wanting to get the U.S. involved in certainly no feet on the ground, that's the big term. They don't want to bring U.S. troops there, but it's going to still it has ramifications. It's going to have diplomatic costs. But on the other hand, many in the U.S. are outraged, and many are saying, how can we let this go on, and how can we let this dictator go on killing people? So.
And as I said, it certainly seems as though this is going to be an issue, even though these calls are being made, but as we indicated, we've been talking about this since August, and it now seems that the momentum is that if a decision is going to be made, we're going to see something perhaps pretty soon.
I mean, it's the effort is to make it a broad-based coalition, that it's just not the U.S. going in against this guy. And that's certainly been the way it is. And what prompted this before yesterday was this week's report by the U.N. that 93,000 Syrians have died since the civil war began, and a lot of people say that's even a low estimate, right? And lots of children, lots of people under the age of 10 have died. So it's had a devastating effect on civilians, and you can't sit back and watch something like that happen is what a lot of people do. So the broader base, the coalition that John Kerry, our Secretary of State's able to broker, is going to probably define, how much acceptance there is of it. If it's just us, it's going to be tough.
Yeah, and Russia and China are the stumbling blocks here.
Yeah, they don't want to get in this one. But even getting other Arab countries, aligned with us around this, will be a big help, and that's what Kerry's working on.
And then you think, okay, and then there's the rest of the world. It's like, and then you have all of the other balls that you're juggling, and think to yourself, you think about. The hopes for peace, the hopes for some stability, and then I don't know.
Yeah, no, I mean, why would anyone want that job?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, that's why the president's hair goes
exactly
gray after.
I love those photos. Every year, his hair is more gray, and it's pretty gray these days.
Yeah. Well, every president has just been ravaged by that office. We're going to take a break. We're going to be back in just a few moments. We'll wrap up and talk about some few. Stories, some local, some a little heartbreaking for us here in the Capital District. We'll talk about those coming up next on our roundtable panel.
Support for WAMC comes from Albany Marriott. With 359 guest rooms, special event and meeting space with internet access, the Market Restaurant and Martini Lounge, and airport transportation, Facebook, Twitter, or albanymarriott.com. And the Cheese Traveler, Albany, New York, a purveyor of over 100 handcrafted cheeses, Tyndale Farm organic, grass-fed, heritage breed beef and pork, artisan pantry items, and cured meats, thecheesetraveler.com.
Like nowhere else. I know I'm in good health. And life keeps going. I keep moving. I'm all right. I go to school.
On this Father's Day weekend, we wrap up the week, and our roundtable panel is here. Ray Graff, Mike Spain, and myself, and we welcome your input as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We welcome your comments as always. One of the stories that we want to talk about as we wrap up here is a story that I just when I heard this morning, I was like, oh no.
Yeah.
I was just yep. I saw it on the news and I was just so upset. And that is for any of us and even though I moved here when in 1985 when I moved here, but I spent my summers here because my mother's entire family was here and my father's family was based out of Saratoga during the racing season. So I spent all my summers here, and those summers were spent at an amusement park on Route 9 in Latham called Hoffman's Playland.
Yeah.
And so the news came out yesterday that it seems as though the family is looking to sell that property. The reason for the sale is kind of interesting.
Yeah, I mean, the Hoffman family owns it, and they have operated it for years. Hoffman's Playland bears their name. And they say it continues to, you know, it's been open since 1952, and it continues to draw crowds, and it continues to be profitable. It's just a small-scale amusement park.
Yeah.
It has lots of fun rides for toddlers. You know, it has little trains where parents can be on there with their little babies, even, and they can go on the merry-go-round.
It's almost like the midway of a carnival that's permanent.
Permanently. Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
I mean, that's almost what it's like. If you're not familiar with it, if you've never been to it, but it has great charm, and it's sweet, and it is. There is a nostalgia to it. I mean, certainly for any of our ages where, you know, we grew up there, so.
It's like going back in time. It really is.
Yeah.
And it continues to draw crowds. I was there a couple of weeks ago with my grandchildren, and there was just tons of people there and having a lot of fun. It was a beautiful day. But it's a seasonal business.
Yeah.
And that area, now, it used to have a miniature golf course and a driving range.
Oh, yes.
And that has already been cleared
because
there's a project that's been on the books for a few years, and it's going to involve apartments and condos and retail and offices, and it's going to be like sort of a planned kind of community type thing. And that's going to be where the driving range was and where the golf course was, which is immediately north of the Playland on Route 9 in the town of Colony. And the Hoffmans are looking at that, and they're looking at all the other development along Route 9 in that stretch. You know, you have Newton Plaza and some, all kinds of nice new projects popping up, and they see the reality. That land could be a lot more valuable than just generating seasonal business, you know. And
it's such a heartbreaker. You know, there were in the old days, Joe, when I grew up, early 70s or whatever, there was Hoffman's. There was Storytown.
Yeah.
There was Frontier Town.
Kateros Park.
Catskill Game Farm,
which I was about
to take my oldest kids to, and then they closed.
Oh, yeah.
Gosh, you know.
And Kateros Park, that's gone. That's the condos up on Saratoga Lake.
Yeah.
And Frontier Town is gone.
Long gone.
Yeah. Long gone.
And then
I think
Gaslight Village and all those.
That's
today's
fun today.
And Storytown, right. And Storytown got bought out. It's now the Great Escape.
Great Escape.
Six Flags, and it's huge.
It's nice.
But this is close to Albany, and it's just a... Well, you know, the interesting thing, Joe, is that the town planner talked to our reporter, our business editor, Eric Anderson, and said, you know, if someone did come in and preserve maybe some small element of it, it could be kind of preserved as a historic kind of park that might still let them develop most of the land, but maybe keep the merry-go-round or maybe keep that little boat thing or that
the old cars that are still the same.
Right. It's amazing they still run, actually.
Yeah.
Something might be preserved. Remember when they closed Kateros, they took the merry-go-round and restored it and brought it over to Congress Park in Saratoga Springs. So, you know, maybe something like that will happen.
And now, the article starts with a question of could this be the last summer? So we don't
No.
There is not a definitive here,
There are still some business concerns that obviously need to be
right. And you know, if maybe this weekend, if the weather does clear, I heard it was going to clear.
Yes, you know, that's what they say
the 40 days and 40 nights.
Attendance there may indicate whether the public would. You know, want to keep this going, but who knows? But it is, it's like stepping back in time, and it's really sad to see these great institutions wind down just for the profit.
And again, and I start off by saying, and I don't, you know, I don't have the evidence to back this up, but you know, so often when we hear about the attractions that we've talked about that have fallen by the wayside, declining numbers, where it was always the reason, you know, they just didn't have the business that they used to have. And here that you have this that's still doing well, but it does make sense because you're comparing it to what it would make if it was a
right.
year-round business. And, you know, kids for some reason don't like going on carousels in the middle of January with snow on them. So,
no.
You know.
Mine would.
Yeah. Yeah. We'd love to take our kids there. No. But, yeah, it's...
I remember going on a bumper car there one time and just bringing my nephew down.
Yeah.
And I'm going on a bumper car and I just, like, they're getting ready and I realize the car is not moving with me in it.
No, I tried it last summer as well. It was a bit of a struggle.
Just, like, weighted down.
I needed a V8 and...
the guy's just like, yeah, you know, why don't you just let the kid take the wheel?
The joy of being a 12-year-old in one of those bumper cars and being able to actually handle it yourself and crash into people, you know, that's just
no better.
That could
feeling.
Be lost. You
know? Yeah, well, good stuff. Well, hopefully we'll hope for the best in that story because it is sad.
I did hear Catskill Game Farm might come back. I didn't see the article. My wife said.
Oh,
there's,
I hadn't heard that.
I don't know where it was or where she saw it, but that would be cool.
Well, how did they get the animals back? They were all
were sold at auction.
Care of, yeah.
I would assume you'd probably get new animals.
Yeah, get a new game farm.
Try to find the old ones.
you think about things about. Have I ever asked you? Because I always remember when I came up to this region. And I don't know either of you remember this, but you came up to this region and you'd get off of the Northway at Latham after, I think it was after the Circle, which, oh, by the way, is closed, partially closed.
Really?
That's another big issue.
Yeah, it isn't actually closed. They're building it and rebuilding it while you go through
it. It's only one lane.
Right.
It's very, you have to navigate that one very carefully.
The Latham Circle is now more confusing than it usually is.
Well, it's funny. Now, there are 1,000 circles everywhere else, and the only one we had way back when is
running. But there's roads running under it, and it's, you know, it's all kinds of craziness.
It's not a standard-type rotary, believe it.
No. No, not at all. But what I found interesting is I remember when I would come up here, I knew I was in this region when you'd get off the exit for Latham, and there was a big Canada Dry.
Oh yeah,
bottle. Do you remember?
Sure,
that?
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah. It was mm-hmm. a huge Canada Dry bottle there, and that was kind of like the beacon that you were in this region, at least for me, for a kid.
Right. There was another one in Menands.
Wink bottle by Montgomery Ward.
Montgomery Ward.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh,
well,
yeah.
You know, we're really dating ourselves here, Ray.
How exciting radio on. Well, let's go back to the fun drive.
1-800.
I remember Montgomery Woods.
All right. Anybody Freers? Anyone?
Yeah, oh, my goodness.
Enough of that. Another big story. We talked about this a little bit yesterday on the program. The new Superman movie is out today.
Oh, yeah.
It's Man of Steel. It stars Henry Cavill, who is a young Brit who has taken over the role that has been played by several actors. Of course, George Reeve.
Yeah.
Christopher Reeve has been played by Brandon Routh. And the kid who played it in Smallville's name has completely escaped my...
Oh, the TV series, Smallville.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Tom Welling, was that the name? I don't know. I can't think of the kid's name.
I haven't watched a show since the Rockford Files. You were looking at me for
Tom Welling.
I did get it.
Thank
right.
You, Sarah
Thank
Duke.
You.
That's Sarah Duke. And then there was Lois and Clark, a short series
with Dean Cain and
The woman who
Sally Struthers.
No, no,
she ended
up on
the
Desperate Housewives.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, yeah. Absolutely. So, but exciting, I think, whenever you look at the longevity of the superhero.
Well, Ray, you just said off mic that the trailer was great.
Terry Hatcher.
Oh, the trailer was great.
Terry Hatcher, yes.
Yes. Sorry.
Sorry, keep going.
Yeah, well, no, I loved it. I mean, Superman breaking the sound barrier. How cool is that?
Yeah.
Getting mixed reviews in the press, one of the things that was said about is Superman a story that we can still relate to as an audience, and they went a way that was somewhat hinted to, I think, in the last movie, but a far cry from the Christopher Reeve films that were lighter in nature. But these took a darker tone. This film taking a much darker tone.
Yeah, it's kind of like the way Batman has evolved. All the Batman movies, you know,
yes.
They've sort of been lighter, a little campy at the beginning, and now they're more dark, you know, and that kind of thing. But you know, that's what the audience must want. But I guess they spend a lot of time developing the Krypton end of it, you know, what happened before he left, you know, and how he was launched to this planet as his own planet was collapsing. And then his father is Kevin Costner.
Oh, you're kidding me.
No.
Really?
Yeah, Kevin Costner and Diane Lane
Brando's
plays
role.
His parents. No, the
Khalil?
Yes, that's played by Russell Crowe, I believe.
Really?
Yeah. And the other thing I find interesting is because you mentioned Krypton, but Kryptonite not a part of this film.
Oh, it's not.
No, the actual sort
the
of
rock
anti
that survived. Yeah, that could,
no, it's more just good versus evil, and a more
but there's
personal
a General Zod.
Story.
Do you remember General Zod? I
in
don't
the
remember him
film.
From the. Yeah, I don't remember him from the comic books.
Yes.
But I do remember him from the Christopher Reeve second film, which you know was. Other Krypton natives who came and have, you know, red sun people who come to our yellow sun and get all these superpowers, and they were evil, and it was good against
evil.
Oh,
yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
There was a great line in the interview that I did with Larry Tai yesterday, his biography is called Superman, and and it's a fascinating biography of the entire franchise and of all the people behind it and so forth. But he said, you know, let's face it, the Christopher Reeve franchise of Superman was the most popular franchise ever of Superman of anything of the comic books of anything of whatever they've done. And he said, and only two of those movies were good.
Yeah, right. Three was a stretch. Four was really a stretch.
Really bad. Yeah, but
two was really good though.
But as a friend, one and two were great. but as a whole, you know, out of four. So meanwhile, there's also this fascinating story that I was reading in Variety this morning that they're just waiting. Last night, the film opened at 12:01, and they have the kid who played, well, he's not a kid, he's 30 years old, but Henry Cavill, who plays Superman, has a contract for three movies.
Right.
So they're just waiting to see how the opening numbers of this weekend will determine as to whether
and when, yeah.
they will go forward, and just sort of that old Hollywood kind of, you know, how's Detroit treating Superman?
Yeah,
you know,
it's playing in Peoria.
And but what the last film made $600 million, but that's not enough, you
no.
know, because you have to have that want and desire from the fans to say, I want to hear more about the story and go on of whether it will go.
I want to see it. I mean, I'm a big Superman fan. I want to see it.
Yeah, but to imagine that Superman could be in danger of, you know, like another film not being made because...
Well, they'll just wait 10 years and make another one. I mean,
right,
you know.
Yeah, I know, but it's like Spider-Man. It's the same story. We've seen the same story five times.
Yeah, you let enough time go by and you just sort of recast it and retell it. The best Superman story this week was the guy in Ohio that found, bought a house and was redoing it and found an old Superman #1 book #1 in his wall. It was there for insulation and he was able to sell it at auction and get five times what he paid for the house.
Oh,
It's a great story.
Yeah, that's an American story.
Note to
that
self: rip down walls on house.
We're out of time. I want to, of course, if you would like to reminisce with us either about Hoffman's or Superman
or the Latham Circle
or the ginger ale bottle at in Latham, we'd love to hear from you. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Go to our webpage, our Facebook page, or tweet us at WAMC Roundtable. Mike Spain, have a great weekend. Thank you very much. Happy Father's Day to you.
And happy Flag Day.
Yes, happy Flag Day. That's right. Mm-hmm. And Raymond, happy Father's Day to you. Have a wonderful time with the children.
I will. Thank you.
We'll talk to you. Coming up next on the program, lots of great stuff, including the amazing Audra McDonald, who we will talk to live. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.